Welcome to everybody who's joining us tonight for this Get Out the Vote reading organized by Christopher Collins and Joan Bauer. So we are here to listen to fantastic poetry, celebrate these local writers, and they've all volunteered their time to make sure we're reminding you to register for your mail-in ballots or just register to vote if you're going to vote in person. Make sure you have a plan to vote in person if that's what you'll be doing. Know where your polling place is. Sign up to be a poll worker, donate some of your time, and fight systemic voter oppression, suppression wherever you see it and wherever it's acting. So we will be hearing quick 5-minute readings from Christopher Collins, Malcolm Friend, Celeste Gainey, Emily Monslate, Cameron Barnett, Jason Baldinger, Dora Lee Brooks, Adriana Ramirez, Ellen McGrath-Smith, and Don Wentworth. So a little bit about White Whale quickly. This is hosted by White Whale Bookstore. I think a lot of us here are from Pittsburgh and know me already from virtual events or from the store, but I'm Anna. I'm the events manager at White Whale. We are missing having you all in the store for events like this. I know Adley and Jill Yeomans, who own the store, they talk really fondly about the events with the local ACLU chapter that we used to get to host. It feels like it's been decades since we hosted an event in the store. So thank you all so much for still being down to come to these, interested in organizing these. We're really grateful for that and grateful to be a part of your community. So we have a ton of other stuff coming up that we think you might be interested in that I'm just gonna shout out really quickly. So next Wednesday, the 30th, we are looking forward to hosting A.H. Kim, who's author of A Good Family. She'll be in conversation with local author Karen Dietrich, who wrote Girl at the Edge. Both those books came out earlier this year. They'll be chatting about psychological suspense, music, Pittsburgh, and what it's been like to release a debut novel at the beginning of a pandemic. There'll be a trivia contest with prizes, including a gift card to White Whale, so definitely come out. On Thursday the 1st, I think a lot of you are already RSVP'd, but we are celebrating Jan Beatty's book launch for The Body Wars. We're super excited to get to host Jan, who's somebody we just absolutely revere, as I know a lot of us do. So definitely RSVP if you haven't. And on Monday the 5th, we're hosting the author of Homegoing and of the newly released Transcendent Kingdom, Yeah, Jessie. She'll be joined by Sarah Elaine Smith, who's a local author who wrote Mary Lou is Everywhere, for a reading and conversation. So all of those are 7 p.m., all of those are virtual, and you can find more details about those at whitewellbookstore.com. So a little bit of housekeeping about Zoom. You'll notice that you're automatically muted and you're not able to unmute for the duration of the reading. We also ask that you keep your videos off if you're not a reader, just for the reading. The chat is on, just for you to message me. So feel free, if you have any questions, either just for me or even for the readers, feel free to put this in the chat. What else? Oh, at the end, we'll have something we've been doing a lot, which is nice, where you can a moment for you to unmute yourselves, turn your video back on and applaud and say hi. So definitely stick around for that at the end. And yeah, that's all the Zoom stuff. So I will turn it over to Joan to do a little bit of an introduction for this evening. And then I'll be reading each person's bio, abbreviated bio, right before they read. So Joan will tell us a little bit about tonight. Then I'll introduce Chris Collins, who will be reading first. Oh, Jen, you're still muted. There you go.
There, we're good. Okay, now we're not muted. First, I wanted to thank you. I want to thank Anna and White Whale. I want to thank Chris Collins and all the poets who are reading tonight and all of you who are here for this reading. I wanted to show you my face mask, which says vote. Let me see if I can put it up there, see vote. Okay, and I just wanted to mention that I've been working elections actually for 50 years since I was a kid in LA. I have never seen anything like this, like what we're going to need to do and the challenges we're facing, but I am exceptionally confident and hopeful, and I think we just have to dig in and do it. In 2016, Pennsylvania was lost to Trump by 5 votes a precinct, and to win this time, we have to win by more than 5 votes a precinct. We really have to win by a substantial majority that is hopefully cannot be challenged. We are 39 days away from the election. We have some great resources available to us. I know some of us are already making phone calls through Pennsylvania Dems, and that's a very targeted and really good program. Some folks I know, I have a lot of friends who are doing phone calls. It's exactly the right time for people to find a way to get involved, and you can look at doing that by going on the PA Dems website, padems.com. And I would also say something about their terrific staff that they have, so that you can call in, and if you have a question, they can actually answer it about the election. They're very good. They answer the phone, and I won't give you the number here, but I will send it out. And I know that and it's pretty easy to come by, but I'm going to send it out. There's also something I would say seriously that you might want to encourage people to look at carefully. We have a lot of people who are going to be doing. I'm actually going back to that PA Dems phone number. I found that as I was trying to help older voters register who are not good with their computers, I was able to go to the PA Dems phone number, and they were actually able to help me help somebody get a ballot and sent to them, and that then have an email sent in 5 minutes that the ballot application had been received, and about 5 more minutes later that it's been approved. So I would say they're doing a great job, and they can really answer questions. There's also, I mean, this is going to be a little confusing. We're going to be doing some things we haven't done before. A good site for people who want to know more how this is all going to work is the actual Elections Division, Allegheny County Elections Division. They have online a list of frequently asked questions. And I would have to say, from having tried to call them, right now they're pretty busy, and they're just starting to send in, they're just starting to send out ballots to yesterday. So if you're wondering why your mail-in ballot is not there, it's because it's coming soon, okay? But a funny thing's going to happen with that mail-in ballot that I think it's good for everybody to know about, because we don't want to lose any votes because they had thrown up on the count that folks don't know how to use them. The mail-in ballots that are coming out to people are going to have 2 envelopes. And so if you can remember this and share this with people, it'll be really helpful. It'll save us a lot. And those 2 envelopes include the secrecy envelope, in which you put your ballot in, and then the mailing envelope, which you put over the secrecy envelope. The secrecy envelope should have no marks on it, but the mail-in envelope has to have the postage and the address it's going to, which is already printed, and the voter has to sign it. The back of the envelope with the signature that they have used on their PennDOT ID or their driver's license. Not their initials, not a smiley face, but their actual signature, as close as they can get it to the originals they've sent. So that's going to be that's going to be important. It turns out the secrecy envelope, if that's not part of the ballot that gets mailed back, the ballot will be thrown out. So let's not have that happening. Those are called naked ballots. We don't want that. We want everybody's mail-in ballot to be counted and to get them back real soon, okay? not the week before, but as soon as they can be filled out. I'm going to send out some material on all of this in my usual annoying way, and I thank you all for your patience, and I thank you for being here for this reading. And now let's go to the poets, and let's do this. Thank you all.
Thank you, Joan. As Joan was talking, as you probably saw, I was putting links to what she was saying, the phone numbers and stuff, in the chat. So definitely, if you want to have the link or the phone number handy, that is in the chat. And as Joan said, she'll send us all an email, which we love. Like, we all adamantly said earlier, like, no, like, your emails actually reminded us all to register. So so thank you. Thank you, Joan, for everything you do within the literary community and outside of it. So first reader up tonight will be Christopher Collins, whose book launch for his latest collection of poetry we were lucky enough to host earlier this year. So Christopher Collins is a longtime books editor for Pittsburgh Magazine. He is the co-curator of the Hemingway's Summer Poetry Series, which he co-curates with Joan Bauer. His latest book is The River is Another Kind of Prayer, New and Selected Poems, which was published earlier this year by Kung Fu Treachery Press. His latest project is the Pittsburgh Book Review. So I will turn it over to Chris Collins.
Hi, thank you, Joan. And thanks to all of you for joining us tonight. It's very, you all know how important this election is, so I don't need to hammer that right now. I might be back a little bit later. For now, I'll just read a couple of poems. I'm gonna read three poems tonight. This first one is called Music. The music is always dying. And so, I'm afraid, is everything else. I attend funerals too often, and those mostly for ideas, like empathy and common concern. What are the neighbors up to? Do I even care? Is someone in that silent house hurting? Up there in the bedroom, how many pills fill that rigid fist? Today, the president called himself the chosen one, and the rest of us just shrugged. There he goes again. More importantly, who covered the spread? What's on for the weekend? Who's buying the next round? All of the buildings have blown down on Butler Street. The cemetery trees were yanked out at the roots and thrown by an invisible hand at the graves, as if to say, hey, you dead, get ready. There's company coming. This is called Small Town Romance. You could almost weep for the bankrupt bartender, but watching his hands for a sign of mercy is the very definition of a wasted day. Over the entrance, they've hung a sign that insists you go away. Habit is the law of the land. Pride and prurience are rewarded, just as empathy is openly despised. They'll piss on you just as soon as leave you dead, translates the Latin on our family crest. Get out the shovel. It's another truth to bury. That old couple shares the window table every day about this time, the blood softly clanking around their gray bodies. He worked a double as often as he could, and she did the same. So went youth and dreams. The streets are crumbling, and our chief exports are cancer and cruelty. Lately, we've all gone unlisted in the phone directory. Blank pages, like a thing a ghost would write. This is my last poem. Thank you for listening. I'm excited to listen to everybody else here. This is an amazing, amazing group of writers. So this is called Out of This Country. talking only to myself under the shuddering lights of the YMCA. The Mexican war streets storm into this perilous evening. Somewhere, my son is grinning and getting ready to yell. I feel as though I could collapse on some manicured stoop and with little effort disappear into the dust. The park must be some battlefield where the ghosts of our failures stalk one another, the blood of good intentions staining that ground. A few bucks and here's a bourbon poured neat. A few more and now I'm surrounded by new friends. Where will it all lead? With a fool in the White House, all things are possible. Every manner of humiliation, right there at my fingertips. Say you are lost. This will bind you to the rest of us. Out of this valley, there's a chance at a better life. Out of this city, out of this state, out of this country. It's a time for sad truths. This is the best life I could hope for. The same could be said for you. Don't let it be said of you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chris. It's great to hear your work again.
Thanks, Anna.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So we have some notes in the chat, actually, that I wanted to throw out there. From Wendy Scott Paff, she said she got her ballot today and it's postage paid. So most important thing, definitely don't put your postage on the secrecy ballot, the secrecy envelope, which has to go inside the postage envelope. I think Jason, who's up next, does have his ballot, so he can confirm about the postage. Yeah. And from Beth, the public, she wants to note that the public libraries will help folks with everything as well. So for example, the Shaler North Hills Library, to check these hotlines and also check your local library, who I know the librarians locally are still doing all of the great, you know, advocacy and connection work that they always do. So next up for our readers is Jason Baldinger. Jason Baldinger's latest books are The Lower 48, which came out from Six Gallery Press, and the chapbook The Studs Charcoal Blues from Night Ballet Press. He'd like to remind you that voting is pretty damn important, and if you need a ride to your polling place, he'd be happy to help you out. So Jason is up next.
Hello, everybody. I got four poems for you in the next 5 minutes. This first one is from my book, The Better Angels of Our Nature. It's called Kerouac Go Home. I hear the waitresses' footfalls, and they sound like roses as they echo across Avenue B, as they echo across the Avenue of the Americas, as they echo at the intersection of Bleecker and McDougal, where Silsby can't understand why there are so many fucking people. Sure, he's got a few drinks in him, but I never thought I'd see New Yorkers turn heads at open indictments of procreation, or at least not procreation, with the intent of furthering the fading bulb of humanity. Jay and Allie say they used to write Kerouac Go Home on the men's room wall at the White Horse. Dylan Thomas is bleeding out. The blood trail runs to the Chelsea Hotel, then beyond. I slipped on it when I tried to remember the last time I had a future. I tried to remember the last time I saw the ocean. There were Mustangs racing on the Garden State Parkway. There were little hands waving on the BQE. I swear there was a Liberty torch in the harbor, its head struggling above the surface. I've snagged myself a driftwood sculpture. There is so much debris, the gulls have picked through the soft and horseshoe crabs. The few untouched are boiling to birth, but the ocean is still waves under the twin eyes of lighthouses. It never bothered with magic or loss. I did get my ballot today. That's the postage paid, I got my ballot dance. Next poem is called this ghostly ambiance. Stop me if you've heard the one about the pregnant waitress and the Zamboni driver. Yeah, I couldn't think of a punchline either. But what would you expect? Holding my breath and drinking a beer at the same time is a new skill. Like spiritualism, I practice it sparingly. I'm trying not to think about the soul of the prime rib in front of me as I notice my past self waiting at the bar, another beer, and a photo of an illuminated Zippo sign before I shuffle off to Buffalo and catch a predator. Did you ever wonder if Leon Kolgosh got into heaven? I overhear the pregnant waitress say she still hopes they're here in 20 years. The sentence was innocent in her mind, but now it's dead on the floor. And I would go through the stacks for another conversation, but fuck all, sometimes it's best to just leave things there, dead. I've got my mask and there's sunset out there where American flags outnumber people. I should strike up a conversation with my adult sense of wonder. Instead, the pregnant waitress returns and offers me another beer. Suddenly, dusk is nonsense. Suddenly, American flags are nonsense. I missed this ghostly ambiance. Mask off, yes, the beer. I suppose I spend more time than I thought talking to the dead. This is for the late poet, Diane Watto. This is called Time with the Way of the Buffalo. I know Wichita from a gas station overlooking the interstate. A jaw-dropping sunrise over the Flint Hills, I pulled my hoodie up against October. With 800 miles ahead, one last gasp of Wichita before wagons west. It's sad we never met. We should have had breakfast, but time went the way of the buffalo. I would have loved to hear in person your story of marching 5 miles in Kalamazoo. You and your friend against the Vietnam War. You and your friend, all dressed up and in high heels. And this last short poem is called Riggs Tavern, or Riggs Lounge, I'm sorry. All it takes is a quarter, flipped or tossed, from anywhere in the bar into the tall, clear beer stein to the left of the register to open the doors of heaven. I got my ballot. I got my ballot. Thank you all.
Thank you, Jason. All right. I keep forgetting to turn my video on when I unmute myself. Thank you for showing us the ballot too, because I don't have mine yet, so I don't know what it looks like yet. All right. Next up is the poet on the other side of this wall in this apartment. Cameron Barnett is the author of The Drowning Boy's Guide to Water, which came out from Autumn House Press, and which was a finalist for the NAACP Image Award. He is the recipient of the 2019 Carol R. Brown Creative Achievement Award for Emerging Artists. So Cameron is next.
Thank you, Anna, and thanks to Joan and Chris for putting this together and hosting this. I want to read two poems tonight. Just before I get to them, though, I just want to say two quick things about voting and its importance. I think when we talk about getting out the vote and encouraging people to vote, I have always believed that's so important. And I also know that there are people who have been taught by the world that it isn't important for them through disenfranchisement and through disillusionment. And so I think when we say get out the vote is crucial for this year and is just as crucial for tomorrow. And that's, I think, something we should keep in mind and work with people to listen to them so that they get out the vote for years to come. And the next thing is to anyone who has people in their lives who are politically well-intentioned and care about people in the world, but are disillusioned by the system and might not want to vote. Something that really motivates me and might motivate them is the reality from the documentary 13th about the fact that people who are convicted of felonies have their right to vote stripped away from them and then their bodies taken to prisons and incarcerated in places where, by the fact that they are present there, they increase the representation in those counties and those parts of the country that oftentimes don't vote in the interest of the people being incarcerated. And that is just such a sick, vicious system. And if that doesn't make you want to vote, I got nothing else for you. But I just wanted to put those two things out there. I have two poems that I'm going to read. This first one is called Black Holes. Consider the body. Consider the pulse and pump and thump of life within. Consider this. There's a squeeze of life into you somewhere, always. You are, in a sense, a sentient sack of plumbing. Consider the body cavernous. A video I watch asks, how many holes does a human have? And it turns out we are not the donut we are so often colloquialized to be. A jar, a cup, a bowl, a plate. Holes only exist if there is a body to host it. The paradox of containment. In the video, I learned that openings aren't holes, just parts of holes. That a straw is one thing with two parts. Consider blackness. Consider the body black. The whole of it sucked through the kinked straw of history, opening to opening. Consider how whole lives were squeezed out of black bodies. Consider the ancestors who prayed for shipwreck, who prayed to be flooded in order to be freed. Consider the weight of what's been kept inside the spaces of our bodies in order just to make it. Consider the spaces in the world where our bodies hide, that visibility and invisibility are the same weight double stacked on blackness. Consider the weight of black holes, supermassive ghosts who lurk dark in deep space. They say at the event horizon, a body sucked in would stay frozen in time forever. Not every hole has an exit. Consider chambers and dead ends and their singular openings. Consider black descendants praying for singularity at the heart of this gravity in order to be free of space and time's cruelties. Physicists consider this point so dense that the laws of physics as we know them break down. Black people might not consider this such a bad thing. How long have we prayed for a different physics? Were it not for gravity, we would bend the world wholly. As it turns out, gravity is the weakest force the universe has to offer. As it turns out, the physicists are silent on the force of justice, not even a consideration. Consider blackness, supermassive and free of gravity, bending the arc of the moral universe all the way around until it's whole again. All right. And this next poem is called Stop Me. Just a heads up for anyone to whom it might matter, this poem has the N-word in it a couple times. Just letting you know. Stop me. If I ever met the president, you might have to stop me from calling him a nigger. Reparations. I don't trust people who speak simply about complex things. Kid wisdom. The floor is always lava. Don't step on the cracks in the sidewalks. Superstition. A ghost story is a conjuring, not a burial. Witness. The twine it takes a sycamore to still a black body. Silence. If I ever met the president, it wouldn't be a question whose button is bigger. His red and mine black lives matter. Take a knee. I sit in the back of a poetry reading and notice all the funny things that next do. Predictable. I stand for the anthem and notice all the funny things people do to remind themselves they love something. Desperation. Sometimes a recipe can be too literal. Knuckle blood. Bigotry wears the same dress to every party. Dances the same tired dance, lonely. I'm no good, lonely. I'm no good without a good drink and a murder of white women walking by. Ghost story. Stop me if this sounds familiar to anybody. I am not a tissue for drying your racism. Thin, the property line between a blessing and a privilege. If we ever meet, I'd have to tell you that we have no better angels. Privilege. All my windows and mirrors are beginning to look the same. Stop me. First place in a swim meet in a sewer. Politics. If I ever met the president, huge, hubris, hyperbole. If I ever met the president, stop me. If I ever met the president, I'd remind him about the funny thing next due between twine, witness. If I ever met the president, I'd be no good without a ghost story. All the funny things bigotry does backlit with gaslighting. When I take a knee, it's for the undoing of knots around the necks of my ancestors. Rewind. If my neck ever does something funny, stop me. If I ever step on the cracks, stop me. If I am ever murdered by a white woman, stop me. If I ever introduce myself as a ghost story, stop me. If I ever call the president a nigger, silence. Thank you.
Thank you, Cameron. Appreciate hearing your work. Next up is Doralee Brooks. Also, quick note, as Cameron was talking about felony disenfranchisement, I put a couple of links to more information about that. If you'd like to find out more and find out what we can do. Doralee Brooks is a fellow of the Western Pennsylvania Writing Project in 1995, and a Cave Canem Fellow in 1997 and 99. She holds an MFA from Carleton University, writes with the Mad Women in the Attic Poetry Workshops, and is a proud founding member of the Subverses Social Collective. Her chapbook, When I Hold You Up to the Light, won the 2019 Kathy Smith Bowers Chapbook Contest published by Main Street Rag. And we will be celebrating Doralee on the 8th with Susan Saylor. So definitely tune into that as well. I'll turn it over to you, Doralee.
Thank you so much, Anna, and also Joan and Chris. It's a great honor to read at White Whale. Love that shop, and I'm always buying books, so I show my love as well. This is a series poem. The title is What She Wore, and each section is the name of a woman. And the poem starts with an epigraph. No one wonders what Lyndon and I wear. JFK, November 22nd, 1963. Serena Williams, library poster. Court lines white as your leather shoes. Your right arm stretches a long stitched net in afternoon sun, bright as blonde braids, big smile. Posing for America's libraries in decidedly off-court attire, bell-bottom jeans, halter top, jeweled navel, you hold a raisin in the sun in left hand. You, 22, and pre-Alexis, pre-Olympia, pre-slam win 23, yellow block letters, tall as you are, scroll down the page, calling to read. Naomi Osaka at the 2019 US Open. Scythian sisters Hippolyta and Antiope draw from the quiver when Naomi Osaka, warrior woman in black pleated skirt and orange bodice, considers the serve, delivers lineage power. No wonder Mark Knight and also Cup Noodle tried to color her white, bind curls a flip or ponytail, sketch dimensions they couldn't fear. Lizzo on SNL. L-I-Z-Z-O eschews hoops and loops, brings her own round to elegantly vowed syllables. Dressed in slits, zips, buckles, and belts, the L-I-Z-Z-O, so Lizzo swings synchronized steps to, I do my hair toss, check my nails, baby, how you feeling? Marie Yovanovitch, Longworth House, DC. And the category is executive, civil servant. Walk, media flash, unfortunate, sensible pumps. Did you say you work for Trump? The woman, he said on a beautiful call, on a perfect call. She's going to go through some things. Hermes sharp as emblazoned saber stare, suits to stone. Crystal flag brooch lit as a voodoo prayer signifies, don't come for me, signifies challenge from the house of the deep state to the house of Trump. He's so rich. And this is the last section. Kimberly Guilfoyle, last night of the Republican National Convention. Straight as a podium in Republican red, Don Jr.'s girlfriend, Kimberly Guilfoyle. Red as a Disney villain, arms outstretched in Perrone parody. It's hard to believe the photo rounding, young Guilfoyle snuggling on a rug with Newsom. Is it true? I want to say fake news. Straight as a podium in Republican red, red as fear, red as pandemic, red as a knee on the neck, as seven bullets in the back, red as ritual of public mourning, red as protest, as the AR-15 supremacy offensive, as Chicago, New York, Portland, St. Louis, Kenosha, as ghosts who howl into a night without curfew, justice for George Floyd, say her name, Breonna Taylor. Let the convention games begin. Let the games end the night after her speech. Let it mark a strikeout. No playoffs, NBA, not even baseball. Home plate wears a Black Lives Matter tee when Mets and Marlins leave after 42 seconds of silence. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doralee. Really appreciate everything you've read. Next up tonight is Malcolm Friend. Malcolm Friend is a poet originally from the Rainier Beach neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. He's the author of the chapbook Mixed Kid Mixtape, which came out from Glass Poetry in 2017, and the full-length collection Our Bruises Kept Singing Purple, which came out from Inlandia Books in 2018. So I will turn it over to Malcolm.
Okay. Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Joan and Chris, for organizing this reading. And for inviting me to read. I'm going to try to keep the preamble short to stay within the reading time, and I'm only going to read one poem. But just wanted to say that I do have kind of complicated feelings about voting. Like, I'm not going to say don't vote, absolutely not, and I myself will be voting. But do also want to make space for the folks who maybe are in that space of disillusionment that Cameron mentioned earlier, as well as, you know, just remind folks that, like, we shouldn't be trying to get back to what was normal before 2016, because normal was never really good for everybody. When you tell me the next emperor will be kinder, I remember the first battle of San Juan, the second battle of San Juan, the third battle of San Juan, the invasion of Huanica, the battle of Yauco, the battle of Fajardo, the battle of Guayama, the battle of the Guamaní River Bridge, the battle of Coamo, the Battle of Silva Heights, the Battle of Asomante, the Treaty of Paris, Americanization, encouraged migration, the Foraker Act, the Insular Cases, Charles Herbert Allen's Sugar Empire, the Official Languages Act, the Sanitation of La Borinquena, the Olmsted Amendment, the rejected vote for independence, the Joan Shaeferth Act, the Merchant Marine Act, Dr. Cornelius Rhodes, the Massacre de Rio Piedras, the first arrest of Pedro Albizu Campos, the Massacre de Ponce, La Operación, the Vieques Naval Training Range, La Ley de la Moraza, the Peñuelas incident, the bombing of Jayuya and Utuado, the second arrest of Pedro Albizu Campos, Operation Bootstrap, the third arrest of Pedro Albizu Campos, El Rey de las Toallas, the imprisonment of Oscar Lopez Rivera, the bombs dropped on David Sanes, the murder of Filiberto Ojeda Rios, the Puerto Rico Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act, benevolence sent Abuela across the sea to die in strange lands. Thank you.
Thank you, Malcolm. Appreciate hearing you. And so everybody knows, in case you didn't see it, I put a link in the chat to some more information on the insular cases, which established that the Constitution doesn't fully apply to what were deemed unincorporated territories of the U.S. So, reminder that Puerto Rico isn't able to vote in federal elections, even though our policies determine theirs. So, and definitely look up everything else that was in Malcolm's poem as well. Next up, we're halfway through. Take a stretch, get a drink, but get back in time for Celeste Gainey, who is next. She is the author of the poetry collection, The Gaffer, and her chapbook, In the Land of Speculation and Seismography. She was a runner-up for the prestigious Robin Becker Prize with that chapbook, and she is currently the inaugural City of Asylum Poet Laureate for Allegheny County. So I will turn it over to Celeste.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're good.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I'm gonna start out with what I was gonna end with, which is, first of all, thank you, Anna and White Whale and Joan and Chris, and I've loved all the poems I've heard so far. Love being in everyone's good company this evening. So with a nod to RBG, I wanna read a quote of hers. Dissents speak to a future age. It's not simply to say my colleagues are wrong and I would do it this way, but the greatest dissents do become court opinions, and gradually, over time, their views become the dominant view. So that's the dissenter's hope, that they are writing not for today, but for tomorrow. And I cast my first vote in a presidential election for George McGovern. And so I have been dissenting for a long time and not always winning, but I think we have to remember that we have to continue to go again and again and again, because the road is long. And so that's my opening thought. I have been working on a series for some time I've been working on a series with of found poems, found sonnets mostly, and they're taken from books of nonfiction, mostly social and political content that I try to find time to read in between books of poetry. So this one is called A Generation Raised Without History, and it is taken from this wonderful book called On Tyranny, which everybody should have. It's a great handbook for our time. And it's by Timothy Snyder. A mythicized past prevents us from thinking about possible futures. We are seduced by the notion of hidden realities and dark conspiracies. The path of least resistance leads directly from inevitability to eternity. What might seem like a gesture of pride can be a source of exclusion. One moment of shock enables an eternity of submission. We take this collective trance to be normal. It is derision that is mainstream and easy. Without the conformists, the great atrocities would have been impossible. We are free only insofar as we exercise control over what people know about us. Put your body in unfamiliar places with unfamiliar people. Take responsibility for what you communicate with others. Our collective trust in common knowledge makes us a society. Staring at screens is perhaps unavoidable, but nothing is real that does not end on the street. And one more poem. This is not a sonnet, but it does combine my words with some words of other people. Our night monotonous, with some words from Thomas B. Edsel, Robin DiAngelo, and Paul Eluard. Morning breaks darkly, rolling claps of thunder. Today might as well be yesterday or tomorrow. The pandemic death toll boomerangs back and upward past 1,000 per day. Certain sets of data assure us the whole of liberal democracy is in grave danger at this moment. Right now, it appears no one is exempt from not having faith, yet you'll be deaf canceled for whatever. In Portland overnight, armed federal agents tear gas a wall of moms in yellow shirts chanting, "Please don't shoot your mother." Watching The Last Dance, I Google, "What's with Michael Jordan's bloodshot eyes?" Dee emails to say she's written an elegy for a friend shot and killed by her own brother on the 4th of July. And where might be a good place to get it published? Someone in the thread suggests the journal Guernica. I wonder if they print it, how many will read her elegy thinking of Picasso's painting? The village in northern Spain where they greeted the corpses showered themselves with politeness. I was in the supermarket and over the cheese section was a small sign saying Black Lives Matter. Like a Hallmark card, childlike, a cheery array of pink, green, and blue. Asleep, I'm on a speeding train with no conductor. Each station, a warning we flash past. I am alternately afraid that the train will never stop and that it will. Let us open together the last flower of futurity. Wake the dreams this dread has furloughed. We shall get the better of them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Celeste. It's really great to hear your work. Next up is Emily Amon Slate. We just unboxed today what felt like the weight of a small child in Emily's new book, which is The Falls, hosting our launch later in October. So definitely pre-order and come on out. So Emily Amon Slate is the author of The Falls, winner of the 2019 New American Poetry Prize, and Feed, winner of the 2018 Keystone Chapbook Prize. She teaches high school English at Winchester Thurston School and poetry workshops to the Mad Women in the Attic at Carlo University. So I will turn it over to Emily.
Thank you so much, Anna, and thank you, Joan and Chris, for bringing us all together tonight. It's really good to be here with you, even from my attic, which is the only room in my house with a lock on the door. I want to just give a quick shout out to all the people who are working so hard to win this election for progressives this year, nationally and also at the state and the local level. I'm just going to name a few of my kind of many local heroes, Summer Lee, Sarah Inamorato, Marie Norman and Matt Weiss, who run a group on Facebook called the Order of the Phoenix, Laura Putnam, Miriam Perez Putnam, Kip Dawson, Tracy Baton, and our own Joan Bauer, who has been volunteering to do election work for 50 years, she told us tonight. So just everyone who's working hard in both seen and unseen ways to fight for truth and for justice for everyone, and to try to make this a real democracy, closer to it. All right, so I'm gonna read two poems. My first poem is about street harassment. You'll hear different voices, and some of the experiences are my own and some are from women friends of mine. Girl in the street. It's the way water eats rock. Hey baby, why don't you smile? How it slips inside a hairline crack. Hey mama, suck my dick. Splits it wide from within. Girl, can you handle 13 inches? I want to wear the jackal's teeth in the street. It's high gaze. But it's just me, a woman walking in my clogs and glasses. My daughter just learned to walk. Girl, where are you going? Still unsteady on her feet. Baby, you got a boyfriend? She barrels into the street, head first. Nice ass, girl, shrieking with glee. Bitch, why don't you smile? I'm almost 40. Girl, don't you want some of this? I should be able to talk back by now, right? Words break bedrock. I remember mine. Fierce slab, layered with love and yes. Bitch, come on back. Their voices became hands, became dogs, became knives. Okay, and my last poem was inspired by Ross Gay's book, Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude. His book made me want to try to write about joy. If you haven't read it yet, you should. And this poem is about trying to move toward the light, which I think we're all fighting to try to do right now. I'm trying to write a joyful poem after reading Ross Gay's new book, which makes me feel light and giddy, like maybe a world in which figs fall from a city sky is possible. But my poem becomes about the collapse of long love, how even the brightest glint in the eye becomes shadow eventually. My son dances across the room in a red cowboy hat. He asked me to chase him, but the girl in the documentary I watch lives in a landfill outside Moscow. She drinks water from dirty milk jugs. And why does my joy always slide into darkness? My son laughs, his 8 teeth new and white, shining in the sun while I tickle his belly. Joy must be at least as complicated as sorrow, which is one reason I hate those posed pictures people take before weddings, before babies, hands clasped over the woman's belly, cupping warm skin, thinking they know what's inside. Maybe joy is an animal that scurries when you get close. Or maybe it's my son pointing out the moon, saying, look, up there, which makes me think how he almost wasn't so many times. And doesn't the girl in Moscow, Yula is her name, have joys too? And this cramped coffee shop hums with people telling other people across a stretch of table what it feels like to live on this planet right now, to have a mouth, to form words. I'm saying, how are you feeling? She's saying, it was just so funny, so damn funny. And the woman next to me, she sighs, she laughs, she holds her belly. Maybe joy is the real mystery. Maybe I've been wrong for decades, only looking under the rock, pointing out the shades of dark. Last night, I lay across from my love and said, I love you. Something I usually say while opening the fridge, while leaving the house, my back turned. I said, I love you, staring right into his open eyes. What made me look is that I remembered he will die. Maybe joy is a hand reaching out in a fierce wind, one so very hard to open your fingers in or your eyes. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Emily. I always appreciate any reminder that the joy is just as important as the rest of it. So thanks for closing on that. Next up is Adriana Ramirez. Adriana Ramirez is a Mexican-Colombian poet, critic, and writer. In 2015, she won the Penn Fusion Emerging Writers Prize for Dead Boys, which came out from Little A in 2016. And her long-awaited book, I added the long-awaited because I can't wait for it. The Violence is forthcoming from Scribner. So I will turn it over to Adriana.
Okay, hi everyone. I wanted to say a couple of things. Number one is vote, of course. The second is volunteer. And the third is be vigilant. I know that people are being recruited to be poll watchers to cause insecurity and to question people. And you should know your rights. You should know that you are able to vote, and you should not let people easily intimidate you if that were to happen at your polling place. Also vote by mail, of course, that is the safest way. I also got my ballot today. All right, let's get to the poetry. I'm gonna read an old poem, but that felt very apropos. I wrote this poem, probably like 6 years ago. But I was born in Mexico, then I came to the U.S. when I was 3 months old, and I became a U.S. citizen when I was 12 years old. And this is a poem about that. It's called Daughter of the American Revolution. I almost failed my citizenship test. There were 10 questions. I missed the first two. To be fair, I was 12, and I explicitly told the old lady administrator I fared poorly on dates. My first lesson as an American, exposing weakness merely opens you up to attack. My friend Matilda will slough the skin of slavery over coffee, 400 years intoned reverent. The goal, she will explain, is to miscegenate things just. The future looks like you. This is when she will point at me, melting pot of wrongs made right. What day was the Constitution signed? A trick question designed to confuse. Most people answer 4th of July. I know this because I will for years poll my U.S. American friends. All of them miss the question. I have committed the date to memory, perfect in my acquired patriotism. Matilda laughs when I tell her I'm more American than she. Not possible, she'll say, and I know she's capitalized the letters. I am a daughter of Africa, Europe, and America. I tell her I am the same. A different Africa, a different Europe, a different America. Plus, she'll say, I was born here. I'm not sure that counts as much as she thinks. The second question I miss. What day did the Civil War end? I mishear it and answer slavery. The old lady will repeat the question, charitable in her administration. Appomattox, I will respond. She'll repeat day like I'm deaf until I circle my head slowly in disbelief that sounds like Spanish. I will grow tired of Matilda. Her contest about which shade of brown had it worse will wear me thin. I will try to explain the plight of Latin America, raped by conquistadores, double raped by America's Monroe Acquisitions Act. I will tell her there's nothing more American than naming yourself after an entire continent, as if there were no one else, United States of. I will ask her if she knows the date of Appomattox. My smugness does not fit inside her silence. When I swore to be a U.S. American, I was given a flag pin and a letter of welcome from the Daughters of the American Revolution. I looked at this old woman, so different from the one before, hugging me in congratulations as if she'd given me the keys to heaven. September 17th, 1787, I said to her. She smiled, confused. April 9th, 1865. She nodded and mouthed, of course, dearie. As if her father's revolution was a secret I kept. She simply delivered flags and soft hugs. A legacy of stick waving and heart palming. And to Matilda, I will say, I took a test to be here. I filled out forms, waited in lines, endured examination. I wanted it. Don't you see, Matilda? I wanted it, unlike you. As if that counts for anything at all. And then the second poem that I'm reading tonight is called To My Countrymen Who Do Not Want Me. Imagine the immigrant on a boat. The year is 1535 or 2018 or something in between. I've always wondered what would make me leave my country. I've always wondered what country would make me leave. I've always wondered what country I can even really call my own. But imagine that immigrant in a boat, and if you can't, then imagine me, for I have been on a boat and thus fulfill both conditions of the aforementioned scenario. Imagine me on a boat, and the year is 1535 or 1983 or something in between, and I'm leaving my country for a new one. But ah, you'll say, where does this immigrant in a boat belong? In a country that does not want her, or in the country that does not want her? And it's funny. Funny that the grandchildren of immigrants hate boats, when those boats transported the seeds of family into land unprepared for invasive species and nations undefended without notion or document. How those grandchildren hate boats and those that come in them. How 1535 or 2020 or somewhat in between. And here I am with my boat face and my boat intentions, reminding you that you are also descended of boats, except that I have enough char between the links to make you look a shade too responsible for a lot more than simply guiding a ship through the night. I've always wondered, how does one prey on the backs of others? On their knees, I suppose, like an immigrant on a boat, leaving everything behind, like there's enough room so we can all breathe, like there's a chance that the boat will dock, and one day too, I can look upon my grandchildren, grateful that they've never had to sail. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adriana. It's always really good to hear your work. And I appreciate everything you shared. Next up is Ellen McGrath-Smith. She teaches at University of Pittsburgh and in the Carlo University Mad Women in the Attic program. Her books include Scatter, Feed, which came out from Seven Kitchens in 2014, and Nobody's Jackknife, which came out from West End Press 2015. Let's turn it over to Ellen.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you, White Whale, and Chris and Joan for making this happen, and to all the poets I've just listened to and the poets that I will listen to after me. This is a great night for me. It's been very lonely since March. I don't get out much, and I take in a lot of news, and it does feel in many ways like Celeste's high-speed train, right, that's out of control, and we just keep passing these flashing lights and think, will this be it? Will this be it? And this is probably the first election where I've come to see the vote as a weapon. And maybe it's always been a weapon, but I've never seen it that way. The road is long. I think who said that? Was it? It was Celeste too. I'm quoting you, Celeste, a lot. The road is long, and we've seen how hard our opponents will work to suppress our votes, to make it hard to vote. And so it must be a very powerful thing indeed. And we need to feel that power and remember that power the next, 39 days, and not get discouraged. I'm going to read one poem called Be It Resolved. Be it resolved that the ones who seek justice will push against boulders even as they sleep, get crushed and start again the next day. That the ones who crave power will reduce human beings to trillions of ants' information. That the carpenter tomorrow, a Friday, will think of her dad when she smells the burnt wood near the table saw. Children will erupt in laughter and rage at the same moment, and they will see 100 faces in the plaster of the wall, and they will love animals. Except for children who've been broken down by broken down adults. That ministers and rabbis and imams and gurus and priests will pull in signals from a place beyond the BS on the news, or will claim to. And hard men, tough women will soften to children just to hear. And the artists will decide that, at least for today, she'll live inside the world of her own making. And the horticulturalist will cradle roots the way a neurosurgeon's laser cradles neurons. And the good police will de-escalate, and the others will think of themselves as rat catchers or cudgels extending from the arm of a real or longed for despot. The man with the Confederate flag on his garage in Deep Creek, Maryland, will feel safe in his lazy boy chair. That the people who wake up and think of doing the most good for the most people are our angels. That the leaders who serve will hold umbrellas over others while the rain falls on their heads. That the comedians will offer fundamental, if distorted, bouquets to the jilted. That the actors will be someone else again with greater or lesser talent. And good or bad, they'll get applause and empty out for the next role. The singers and dancers and all the musicians will shape the air and take us somewhere else. And the poets will do that too, though invisibly, dressed in faded jeans and aging without any intervention. The dogs will bark and fixate on food that is not in their dish. The cats will get what they need until forced to visit a door and be sweet. The squirrels will go about their business. The peregrine falcon will peruse the Allegheny Valley for small game. The rats of Polish Hill will carry on with their unaccredited food banks and post-apocalyptic boot camps. The birds will bicker for suet and seeds. And the worm will turn. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ellen. All right. Last, far from least, is Don Wentworth. He's the author of 3 full-length poetry collections from Six Gallery Press, the most recent being With a Deepening Presence. Forthcoming books include collections of ghazals from Logos Press and haiku from Lasco Editions. Turn it over to you, Don.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'd just like to say that the Pittsburgh literary community is pretty amazing, and that White Whale Bookshop has proven to be a real linchpin of our community, and our thanks really go out to them, to Joan and to Chris for organizing this. What follows is maybe a little bit different. I've got a new chapbook coming out of haiku, and so I have a few of those poems and one ghazal. So there's a few haiku, a ghazal, and a few haiku. This I saw out our back door. 27 sparrows swaying on a wire. No masks required. And this is the only poem that I'm going to read that I've read before. I read it at our ACLU reading a few years back. Outside the polling place, 2 halves of a worm wriggling. Eating Cheetos at the farmer's market, the farmer's son. And this is a poem about childhood, which for me was many, 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 many years ago. And when I was a kid, we'd spend our nickel and dimes on baseball cards. And when we got a duplicate, we'd attach it to our spokes of our bikes and make some god-awful noise. And this is about that. Yogi Berra in the bicycle spokes, going all the way. This is a ghazal, a Middle Eastern form. I'm going to let it explain itself. This is entitled Those Falling Petals. Assisi wrote that at times, God too will stop, kneel, and pray. At Rehoboth Beach, dolphins skim waves, such silence in their wake. In the morning, as the dawn opens up, the moonflowers all close. This is the very essence of young love, minus its so, so sweet pain. Friend, step with me into the light and through the door of metaphor. See the stones and the tulips and the lovers and roses and single flaming sword. The sparrows in the garden will never cease singing, so why should I? If you think these things different, it's time to stop thinking for a while. Once upon a time, you were unalive, and now you're undead. Again, you'll be unalive, which should untie any Gordian knots. Celebrate the falling petals as you do the blossoming rose, my love. The question blossoming in the next bed is yes, just that, my friend. That's right, I have no argument with believers or unbelievers. Sit down, be quiet, and listen. Truth slips by in our silent wake. And a couple of more haiku. And I've been a librarian for 40 years, and I want to just second what was said earlier about the libraries. And, you know, if people need any information on any side of an issue, they need help, we do a lot of social work, come on in. Any of the libraries in the county can help. Haiku. Song sparrow in the lilac, trilling away my life. And this one. Today, you voted too, November morning glory. Hearing the finch, seeing the dragonfly, I lie again. And the final one, this is for everybody. Today's test will be open book, evening swallows. Thank you very much.
Hi again. I told you I'd be back. First, let me thank all of the readers tonight for joining us and sharing their amazing work. Thank you to Malcolm, Celeste, Emily, Cameron, JB. Thanks to Dorlee and Adriana. Thanks to Ellen. Thank you, Don. And of course, thanks to Joan, who really should be getting the credit for organizing this, not me. Joan spearheaded this, and I just said, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it. So thank Joan. I'm happy to be by her side always, but let's make sure Joan is the one thanked for that. And thank you to Anna and White Whale for everything they've been doing throughout this whole clusterfuck of a situation that we live in right now. They are, Anna and White Whale, doing a lion's share of holding the literary community of the city together, in my opinion. And I will be forever thankful to them for doing that. So a common refrain here at my house comes from my wife this year, which has been, we've lost so much. We've just lost so much. And she's referring to, of course, being able to see our friends, being able to say goodbye to the people that we love who have passed on, just normal interactions, just feeling normal, feeling like we can breathe in a crowd of people, go grocery shopping. We've lost so much. So coming into this particular reading, that kind of hung over my head. Joan asked me to say something, like, I guess, if you've been to the Hemingway series, do those introductions. So I was thinking about it in terms of this reading, what to say. And I honestly don't know what to say. Vote, please. As Malcolm said, I can understand not wanting to vote or not believing that it matters. But the numbers say that it does. And those numbers prove out time and again. It does matter. So please vote. This reading had me thinking about coming into this in an essay by the writer Alexander Chee. And I just want to quote a couple of pieces from that essay. This is from his On Becoming an American Writer, which is an essay that overall is framed by the 2016 election and his response, but it's also about 9/11 and the Iraq War, which all seems to be a continuum, really, to where we are right now. And he says, on seeing the results come in that night in 2016, and I think a lot of us shared this feeling, he says, it felt as if a president had been assassinated, but the president was alive. Instead, the country we thought we would be living in was dead, as if a president had assassinated a country. And I thought that very eloquently summed up that feeling the morning after, when we were all trying to find words to convey where we were now and what was coming. And I naively felt like entering 2020, we might get out of this without something entirely crazy going on and him killing a bunch of people. I was wrong. I was very, very wrong. So just goes to show I should never doubt the capacity for just cruelty and ignorance on the part of the man in the White House. And confronting that as a writer, as all of the readers did tonight, not an easy thing to do, I think. Not for me personally. How do you find a voice in that without just raging at, you know, you're just shaking your fist at the clouds at that point? And so Chi, who's also a teacher, he ends this essay with this bit, and I'll end my bit tonight with his words. This is what he had to say about that. He says, if you were reading this and you're a writer, and you, like me, are gripped with despair. When you think you might stop writing, speak to your dead. Write for your dead. Tell them a story. What are you doing with this life? Let them hold you accountable. Let them make you bolder or more modest or louder or more loving. Whatever it is, but ask them in, listen, and then write. And when war comes, and make no mistake, it is already here. Be sure you write for the living too. The ones you love, and the ones who are coming for your life. What will you give them when they get there? I tell myself I can't imagine a story that can set them free. These people who hate me. But I am writing, I'm a writer, precisely because a story did that for me. It set me free. So I always remember that. And I know to write even for them. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Thank you so, so much. Don't send in a naked ballot. Nobody wants to see a ballot's genitals hanging out. So please, no naked ballots this year. It's just gross, people. Please, decorum. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for your kind words too about White Whale. And if I can just add before we all come out and say hi and applaud, please vote and also have voting be a part of the actions that you regularly take to support the people in our community. I think a lot about something that Josie Duffy Rice says often, which is that you vote for the enemy that you want. So you vote for the person that you are most willing to fight and who you think is willing to fight with you and for you and that you think you can get the most of on, as opposed to voting for somebody you love and then just being disappointed when they don't perform the way you want them to. So even if this election is not inspiring to a lot of us, we vote for the enemy that we want, not the enemy that we don't want. All right. Let's I'll come on out if you like and applaud these excellent poets who spent all this time with us.
Yay! Thank you all.
Good stuff, guys.
Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you to the poets for reading. Yeah, is there anything else anybody wants to close on?
Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's just do this.
Take care of yourselves and take care of each other.
Mm-hmm. It's a great reading.
It was a great reading, and thank you all for your voices. It was extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was, Rosalie. I agree with Rosalie. It was extraordinary.
I wish that if there was a way, or is a way, maybe there is, for other people to see that this reading or and hear it. And you said you recorded it. Maybe if there's a way, you can send us a message so I can pass that on, particularly to the protesters who stand on the street every single day for 1 hour from 70 to 95 years old, just to say, we support you all in your efforts for equality and justice. And that's the way it is. And they're not all writers, but there we are together. Mm-hmm. Thank you again. It was really special to hear all of you.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
All right. One more round of applause. Thank you again, Chris. Chris, I'm still going to shout you out, even though you said only shout out Joan. But thank you again, Joan. And I really appreciate everything everybody in this Zoom room does for everybody. All right. So hope to see you at the next one. Definitely see you at, you know, in spirit at the ballot box, and take care of yourselves.
Good night.
Happy night.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye, guys.